You won't find them in the club, cause they are all up in the pub. They're our favorite nerds, they're the Twisted Sisters. You may like them, you may not, but you should probably give them a shot. They have the greatest words, they're the Twisted Sisters.
Hello, and welcome to our conversation. This is Becky.
This is Callie.
And we are the Twisted Sisters. I almost said the Inglourious Bastards. That's hilarious. So, Callie's back.
Yay.
But Amanda is sick. So it's just the two of us today. So, Callie, what are you drinking today?
I'm drinking Gatorade because I did a 5K before I did this, and so I'm just drinking Gatorade. I didn't think it would be a very good idea to drink alcohol on the same day as I do a 5K. They seem counteractive.
It's interesting because I know, like, okay, so I didn't really, like, start drinking, and I definitely didn't start drinking beer until, like, the last year or so, with being in the soccer supporter group and then being in the pub. But a lot of my running friends do drink beer after they run, which is, I don't know, it seems, I guess, I don't know, maybe because it has carbs in it? I have no idea.
So. Are they running for the endorphins, or are they running to lose their pregnant belly?
No, they're running for the endorphins.
Yeah, see, I have to lose a pregnant belly, and I can't keep adding to it with beer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, it's totally for the endorphins, and these are the, like, my marathon and half marathon friends, too.
Yeah, so, 5K is as good as it's going to get for me right now.
Yeah, maybe that's the difference. Maybe it's the middle distance, that's more the middle, longer distances.
Yeah.
That's why they do that. Nice. So I am drinking beer. I have a Lagunitas little something something that I picked up in Indiana when I was there for the live event.
Ooh.
It's really good. It's kind of citrusy. And so I really know nothing about beer. That's probably like hops. I don't know. It's just really kind of light and citrusy and pretty nice.
Nice. So. Well, I'm going to throw it out there that I tasted a single malt scotch.
Whiskey, sure.
Scotch. In the middle of the week. And it was like, I just decided, I hate scotch. I hate scotch. I hate whiskey. Mm-hmm. I'm a terrible alcoholic.
Well, because being an alcoholic is something to aspire to.
It was awful. I was like, nope, right. I just can't do this. I can't do this straight alcohol stuff. I have to have it all mixed in with sugary nonsense, which is probably why I can't get rid of the pregnant belly either.
Right. Yeah.
That was...
Well, yeah, up until, like, the last year or so, it was always mixed drinks for me, too. Like, my favorite's a mojito. I still love mojitos. Like, I haven't had one in a while, but I still love them. But, yeah, it was always the sugary ones, too.
So, heck, yeah. Bring it.
Yeah.
That's how I like my coffee, too, with tons of sugary creamer in it. Don't
see,
give me black
I
coffee.
Go completely black. Yeah, my coffee is black. My philosophy is if it's not good enough to drink black, it's not good enough to drink.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I'm
one of those
hardcore.
Those crazies. Yeah. And iced tea is unsweet. Just plain.
I don't like sweet tea either. I like straight tea, which is weird because I like really sugary coffee. Not sugary, but like creamy. I don't put regular sugar in. I just like creamer that's got flavoring in it.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't like to be super sugary.
I think that would be weird with cold tea. Like, now, okay, so though when it comes to hot tea, like, I love my Kenyan chai. So it is Kenyan tea has milk in it. And it's not like the British kind where they heat up the water and steep the tea in it and then pour cold milk in it. Mm-hmm. No, they heat up the water and milk together and then steep the tea in that. It's so much better.
Really? I'll have to try that.
Yeah. It's like half milk, water, or maybe slightly less milk than water. Heat that up. I just put it in a pan on the stove top and then heat that up and then steep the tea in it. And then, yeah.
That sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm totally trying.
Yep. And it's way better. And I do put sugar in that, though. I don't know. I think putting cream in cold tea, that just seems weird. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't maybe know that it would really meld nicely.
Right.
Seems like it would be kind of weird.
Yeah. Okay, right. So we are consolidating our guilty pleasures and fangirl section, because sometimes you couldn't find two things, and sometimes it was a little bit weird as to like if it was a guilty pleasure or fangirl or both. So, Callie, what do you have this week for either one?
Okay, well, I did go to the health food store, which is very nerdy. Mm-hmm. Well, not nerdy. It's crunchy. We call them crunchy moms who hang out at the health food store.
Yeah.
I'm not nearly... being a crunchy mom is really time-consuming. Mm. And I'm just going to throw it out there that I went to the health food store to find something to nuke for lunch. Health food stores are not for finding things to put in the microwave. Please don't go to the health food store and expect anything to put in the microwave. You're just not going to find it there.
Right.
And I also bought a bar of chocolate, which was terrible. Yeah. The health food store didn't end up being very healthy for me. It actually ended up being terrible, not healthy at all. But I did find this bar of chocolate that is like all natural, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Organic free trade.
Organic, yeah. Organic free trade chocolate that was amazing.
Yeah.
And it was a local brand.
Cool. So,
and I wish I had the bar in front of me but go to your health food store to buy chocolate because it is free trade and it always tastes better.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I work for the environmental agency, and here in this state, and we have a committee there at the agency. It's just like an employee committee. It's not something with related to the agency, but it's called the Green Team. And they do various like things out in the community to do learning about how you can interact with the environment in a good way and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then also they do like recycling programs for the employees. But they sell free trade organic chocolate bars.
Ooh,
and
yummy.
So that's where I get mine. But if I didn't have that, I would, the health food store is a good place.
Yeah. I don't spend a lot of time at the health food store, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
I rarely go there, but my mother-in-law is visiting and she's very crunchy. And so we've been there quite a bit the last month. She's been here helping with my kids. And so we've been there a lot for her. So I found quite a few interesting things there. Mm-hmm. But the local co-op health food store.
Place, Yeah. I go to Aldi a lot, and it's just down the street from my house, and they have a lot of organic items there. I don't think everyone has them, and especially if you're not like in the city, you might not. But they're a no frills grocery store. Like everything's like kind of still in their boxes on the shelves.
Yeah,
and they don't have like. They don't have, you can purchase bags, but they don't have bags that they just give you. So you have to either bring your bags or like buy a bag for your groceries.
Right.
So everything costs less. So if I'm getting organic stuff, I'll try to go there. And plus it's close.
Yeah.
But they don't carry everything. So
sometimes we have it's other hard to shop there because they don't have it's so much easier to shop at Walmart. Now that sounds terrible, but when you've got three kids and a full-time job, it's easier to shop at Walmart and just buy everything in one place.
Yeah.
Getting a kid in and out of a car seat is a nightmare. Mm-hmm. But so the other thing I'm nerding out about, I'm just gonna throw one more in there, is I have been trying to do a 5K every weekend because I only get to exercise once a week.
Sure.
And I have to do it. I need the endorphins. I need to lose the baby belly. There's so many things that I need to do it for. But in order to really motivate myself, I joined a running club that gives you a medal by putting you do like online 5Ks. So you sign up for the 5K, you put your time in, and they send you your medal, and it's always something from Doctor Who. So it's the Whovian Running Club is what it's called.
Okay.
And so you always get a Doctor Who medal. What?
I'm signed. As soon as we get done with this, I'm signing up because
it's awesome.
Running and Doctor Who, like those are my love languages.
It's
right
so
there.
Cool. The last one I did, you get a police box. There's a sonic screwdriver one going on during February. Every month they have something different, and I love it. I love signing up. I love getting this super nerdy medal in the mail, and I write my time on the back of it in Sharpie because I'm a nerd. I'm okay with it.
What? You're a nerd? No. Okay, so my fangirl submission here is, I was listening to NPR the other day, and there was this commentary piece on All Things Considered, and so I looked it up online, and so it's entitled Taking Stock in the Search for Aliens, and we all know that I love aliens. It's talking about SETI, so the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, has been doing a lot of research recently, and they have found this star, and let me look through this here. Okay, so they found the star that they've called the WTF star, and I was like, whoa, this is NPR, like, are they going to say that? No, it means, where's the flux?
Of course.
Of course it does. So they're looking for exoplanets, so which are planets that are orbiting stars that are, like, way out there. And this star, so they say the way that they can discover exoplanets is that they'll pass between us and their sun. So the star that they are orbiting, they'll pass between that that sun and us. And so we will see a momentary decrease in the light from that sun. And it should be regular. So if it comes around this approximately the same distance from, like, the dimming comes at the same distance each time, then it looks like it's actually a planet that's orbiting that sun. But this one that they found, this WTF star, it wasn't regular. It dimmed and brightened in ways that no one had ever seen before. It was crazy weird, and it just got weirder. So one of the ideas about it is that maybe it was like meteors that were going in between, but also it was just dimming. So not only was it having a momentary dimming, but it was actually, like, incrementally dimming too. So they're not quite sure what's going on with it. But for scientists, if we're not quite sure what's going on with it, that means we want to look into it even more. It becomes more interesting if we don't know. And then there was more. More things in here too. So a year or so ago, there was a privately funded institution called the Breakthrough Initiative that gave $100 million for doing serious, sober SETI science. So they say this is really good news because the bottom line is that things really are changing in our study of planets and life of all kinds. But it's not going to be like how the movies depict it. So with science, things take longer than, like, in Contact, where, like, 2 minutes later they're like, oh yeah, here we go, we got it, figured it out. It's not how science goes, but no. It's still really exciting because it's another step in possibly finding sentient life on planets outside of our solar system. So
sure,
I am really stoked about that. And then maybe I have one other thing too that I wanted to talk about. So I don't know if this is a fangirl or if this is a guilty pleasure, but I've been crocheting a lot. And I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I really love crocheting. And so, like, when I'm watching watching Netflix, I'll be sitting there crocheting too, because I have to do something with my hands. I've got ADHD, and so I have to be doing something else. I can't just be watching the show. So prior to this, I was doing some kind of, like, number game or something, or logic puzzle, but now I'm crocheting, so I can actually have something for my effort. And I crocheted a little baby hat for Nathan, one of the other pub mates, for his new baby. She was born, I think, in early December.
I
remember correctly. Is that right? And he just sent a picture of her wearing her hat. shared it in the
pub. Oh, I saw that. Who wore the hat better?
She's so cute. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so I, back when I was crocheting it, I posted a picture of it because it was the first time I'd ever made a flower, a crocheted flower. And it came out really well. And so I took a picture of it and I said, yay, my first flower. And Billy, who's also in the pub, he said, I'll take one. I'm like, really? You want one? So I made him a full size hat. So he has an adult size hat of the baby hat. Like, his flower is exactly the same size, though. Like, I can't make it bigger. So his flower is the same size as hers is. So it's like huge on her head, but it's small on his head.
Oh my gosh.
And so, yeah. And so he got his hat first, but hers was the inspiration. Like, she was the inspiration for the hat. So I made a hat for her originally, but I didn't like how it came out. So I took it all out and remade it. But that was after I gave him his, because I had a time limit on his, because I had to have it done before the live event. So he received his first, but she was the inspiration for it. So
nice.
Yes. So I'm really loving crocheting. I'm doing boot cuffs for myself right now. I've got one done and I'm probably about halfway through with the second one. So
nice.
Hopefully within the next week, I'll be able to actually wear them. And maybe in the next week, it'll actually feel like winter again here in Oklahoma, because it was summer yesterday.
It was
89 degrees yesterday.
Well,
yes.
It was 42 degrees at its warmest here today, but that, I mean, we've been at negative 30. So
let's
go outside. The kids were in short sleeve shirts and I did all my 5K outside. It was nice. And
we've had some icing events here. Well, I think we've only had actually one real one. And then another one that was like, oh, everything's going to shut down. And then it really was not bad. But it really hasn't gotten that cold here this year, which is really kind of frustrating, because in the summer, the bugs are going to be horrible. But anyway.
Well, I haven't been on the show for 2 episodes because I've been really busy taking care of some family stuff and whatever. And so I was back and forth to Denver actually a few times for that reason. And I was able to get together with 3 other pub members. Roy, Nicole, and Barb. And Roy brought his wife, who is not in the pub, but she should be in the pub. She's basically a pub member.
Roy, up your Patreon to $2 and we'll put her in the pub.
Right. Come on, Roy. Bring Kimberly in. So she's awesome. And I brought a plus one of my own, just one of my good friends who lives in Denver. And we all had a really good time at a brewery there. It was a little loud, so we weren't able to talk as much as maybe we wanted to. So we are going to meet again on the 25th in Denver. So if you join the pub, let us know if you are in the Denver area on the 25th of February. We would love to add you into our pub meeting in Denver.
Yeah. And also on the 25th, we're going to have a pub meetup in Kansas City. Tony, Mindy and I are going to be meeting, and Adam wasn't able to meet that weekend, but he's pretty close too. So if you're listening to us and you are within driving distance of Kansas City and you want to get in on it, you can join the pub at patreon.com/ingloriouspastors or Pastors Podcast, one of those. I should know by now. let me know and we'll get you the information about that. It'd be really cool to meet some new turds.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah. So, well, I think we're done with that. So now we go on to our unraveling segment. Today we have with us Ray Guilford, who you can find in the pub, and he's also on Twitter at Galactic Wonderlust with no vowels. Hey, Ray.
Hey.
So good to have you today.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So Ray is one of our pub friends and Twitter friends, and he has a pretty interesting story of his life in evangelicalism and afterwards. So Ray, if you just give us a little bit of information about how you grew up, what your church history is, where you live, all of that stuff.
Well, I live in Austin, Texas. I was born and mostly raised here. Lived from when I was 11 till 16 in Fallbrook, California, which is in Southern California, about an hour north of San Diego.
Okay.
And I'm 53, so I'm not sure if I'm the oldest. I think I am the oldest member of the pub, which I think Matt and Brad found interesting because a lot of people in my age group are jackasses as far as the pastors are concerned.
Right.
And I think that's just because I didn't grow up in the church. So, and I didn't grow up in a kind of a heavy ideology, conservative or whatever. That stuff happened after I converted to Christianity. Then I took on all that stuff. So I have a pretty snarky sense of humor. And so everything that the bastards do, I might be not expecting it, kind of startled, but it doesn't like offend me, gross me out, or creep me out, or any of that sort of stuff. It's just like, sometimes it's like, oh wow, I can't believe you said that. and then sometimes it's stuff that is directed at Michael. But so growing up, I grew up around Christianity. I didn't grow up in it. I didn't grow up in the church. My grandparents and my mom and my aunt were Christians. Or my mom's still here. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't really make a lot of effort to take me to church. I mean, I literally maybe 10 times of actual church services, not funerals.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was raised on was, some people might say I OD'd on it, which was Star Trek, Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, Looney Tunes cartoons, Batman and Superman, and every science fiction thing that I could find.
That's probably why you and I've connected.
Yeah.
Because I'm a science fiction lover too.
So that was what was going into my psyche. Not so much the stuff that was going on TV church, which was mostly what if I was at my grandparents' house, because they went when they could, they didn't go all the time. Mm-hmm. And so when they didn't go, they were watching Oral Roberts and a couple of the earlier televangelists, the guys like Jim Baker and Jimmy Swaggart.
Oh yeah.
They were around Olstein's age, maybe a little younger at that time.
Uh-huh.
I'm talking in the late 60s.
Yeah, yeah, like his age
Olstein,
now.
Yeah. So they were like in their 35-ish to 40, and they hadn't made a hit yet. They were kind of on their way up. So they weren't the ones that were on TV. It was Oral Roberts, mostly. Oral Roberts, Billy Graham. And there were a couple of shows, a local church services that had a feed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was it growing up. And so I didn't have any Christian background to speak of. And so it made me unable to relate to the kids that did.
And living in Texas, that's probably an interesting thing, because I went to high school in Texas, and Christianity is cultural there. At least I was in North Texas, so not central there, like Austin. But even there, it's probably pretty cultural, I guess I'll say.
Were you Northwest or Northeast?
Dallas.
Dallas, okay. I mean, when I was a freshman in at UT, mm-hmm. I was walking down the street from my. We were living in my. I was still living in my grandparents' house, and I was walking down the street, and this guy who's I guess every town has somebody like this. Let's just say he was a little bit differently abled, and seemed to he would come up to anybody, total strangers, and act like he hadn't seen you in 6 months mm-hmm. when you'd never seen him before, and you couldn't convince him that he didn't know you. And so he said had something about church, and I just said, well, I don't go to church, which I didn't at that time. And we were outdoors, but you could have heard a pin drop. It was that he was like, if it was one of those old computers and they'd stuck some data in that was fouling it, you would have started seeing just blowing and smoke coming out of it. It was that much of a.
Does not compute.
And, so I was through Campus Crusade for Christ, and the reason I was at Campus Crusade for Christ, part of it was there was a girl that I followed down there, and at least I wanted to do the missionary dating part. She didn't. and you know, they kept talking and. After you hear something repeated enough, you will start to believe it. And you know, I felt like I really hadn't given Christianity a chance, and so I sat down and said the sinner's prayer, and the course of my life changed. Mm-hmm. And so I bounced around between congregations, and I kind of had a growing disillusionment all the time, I think. But I just didn't, for the longest time, I wasn't giving it voice. I was just annoyed with, or frustrated with people not explaining things very, very well, but wanting me to, quote unquote, have faith.
Oh, yeah.
Then the descriptions of heaven just were falling apart, and it's a different story with everybody. And at one point, after listening to some of the stuff people were saying about, especially after I started to, after I filed for divorce from the Republican Party, which was in 2003, after the war started.
It took me longer.
hearing the stuff that people were in favor of, I started thinking, can we just opt out of heaven? I mean, I really don't want to hang around with these people anymore after this whole thing is over with. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of just built, gone on to where I hear things and I'm like, okay, yeah, you go where you want to go and I'll figure something out for myself. So I haven't spent a lot of time in predominantly black churches. Mm-hmm. It's all been mostly white churches. And so we're in Texas. And yeah, this is a blue city, quite a very blue city in a red state. But 30 years ago, there really wasn't... There weren't very many the prospects for dating without getting some approval from a lot of different people, and not always the lady's family. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really find anybody in church, and so that was kind of hard. And I think that might have been easier if I'd stayed at like my mom's church. But I left there to go to become a charismatic, and then I left there to become a fundamentalist. And then
just going all in.
Yeah. And so then I moved to California, back to California for a couple of years, and I was at a Foursquare church. So we're going back to charismatic environment. And then I came back to Austin and went back to fundamentalist church, and I was there till about 2001, sometime after 9/11. And then I just kind of left and didn't really go back. Mm-hmm. And I converted to the Antiochian Orthodox Church about 11 years ago.
Okay.
And I don't know if I'm still, I mean, they haven't sent anything out saying that I'm quote unquote excommunicated, but I did post a video on Facebook that I don't believe in a lot of this anymore. And my priest saw it. So I don't, he just stopped sending me things really.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm still on the big email list for the church. And so, and he and I haven't talked about all that since then. But they, I found to be the most humble of the congregations I've been in, and everything's a part of a divine mystery. So they don't, they're not sure anybody's going to heaven, and they're not sure anybody's going to hell. They say salvation's up to God, and that was at that when I first heard that. It's like, yeah, you're right. It's not ours to say where someone is or isn't.
Right.
So it's, I guess, I've had the same kind of thread, I guess, as far as the, I posted something about Science Mike, and then Inglorious Pastor's account started following me, and that's kind of how I landed in the pub.
That's your pub story, yeah. I think that's pretty common. That's my pub story, too. Is that the same with you, Callie?
No, I found him on the New and Noteworthy.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think it's I think it might be Amanda's story. It was one of the two of you. So I think she also got followed, something. But well, cool. Callie, did you have any questions you wanted to ask?
I do. I have some questions that we've kind of thrown out there.
I wrote some notes down this morning
from my questions.
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay, let's start with what's your favorite nerd thing and how has it influenced your life? And you kind of talked about your nerd stuff.
But how did
that influence
over the
you?
Top is going to be Star Trek.
Yeah?
And,
well, my dad took me flying when I was like 3 in little Cessna, like 172 and Piper Cub light aircraft. So I was 3 years old. And so I never had a fear of flying. And he taught me the names of the planets. And so I and then a heavy dose of science fiction. But Star Trek was really has been the driving force behind a lot of my feelings about where, at least, the potential for humanity and what ought to be out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you may see me say something in the pub about just want to go sit on Olympus Mons on Mars for the afterlife and watch the dust storms. because When I think about what I want to see is the what I call the wonders of creation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean the Colossus of Rhodes and the Rock of Gibraltar. I'm talking about pretty much everything that Hubble shows us.
Yeah, like the rings of Saturn and nebulas. Yeah. And yeah. Uh-huh.
And so that's more appealing to me than pearly gates and streets of gold and what looks like just an insufferably long church service. I'm not really feeling it, and haven't been feeling that for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
even life on other planets then?
Yeah, I always have. And the whole idea of like where the in Genesis, where you read where it looks like they're trying to say that all the stars and everything, the stars are just kind of an afterthought. It's like, oh yeah, he made the stars also, just
right.
And so you've got this luminary thing, big one, and this little small luminary thing, and so they were looking at what was in front of them, and they didn't have telescopes and all that, and so I'm looking at it as the stars are actually the most important thing, because this rock came out of all that gas and dust and all that. And so I was a little bit, I guess when I found out that Einstein's formulas show us that we're not supposed to be able to go faster than the speed of light, I went through a kind of a denial phase. And it's all driven by Star Trek, because it's like, hey, warp speed, let's go.
Yeah.
Then I actually worked. When I got in calculus class, I started actually working through the formulas. And I'm like, oh, wow, according to this formula, yeah, we can't go faster than this speed limit thing. But that's from Star Trek. And then I was a fan of Star Wars and the original Battlestar Galactica. I've watched the new one that everybody calls BSG, but it just kind of doesn't quite do it for me. Other than the music, I really when I think of Battlestar Galactica, I think about the Lauren Green and all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's your favorite Star Trek?
Do you mean series or episode, Kelly?
Series.
I guess my favorite series is gonna have to be Enterprise. The fifth one, the last one.
Sure.
Just because it's kind of put faces to the original, the origins of it before.
Okay.
We saw the movie First Contact, where they shot off that rocket and met the Vulcans.
Mm-hmm.
Once they did Enterprise, it kind of put faces to the beginnings of Starfleet and the and so that one's been one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I watch the original series sometimes, but it and I feel like to really understand the show, you need to see that these new movies. Okay, it's great cinematography, and J.J. Abrams real good with that flashlight in front of the camera.
Uh-huh.
But if that's all you've seen, there's a lot missing.
Yeah.
And I really wish there's some things that are in the original series aren't in the movie, and I kind of wanted to insert them into the storyline and screw everything up. Spock's little relationship with Uhura.
With Uhura? Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's an episode called Amok Time where Spock's actually got this woman that he's supposed to get married to, mm-hmm. which during all that time frame would have screwed up that relationship with but I guess they can say, oh, well, she died when the planet went away. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of anything that happened, they can just kind of say, oh, well, they didn't make it. They were just kind mm-hmm. of, sorry, fell into the black hole and gone.
Right.
So, yeah, it would have to be Star Trek's the main one. I mean, I have shows that I watch now, but that's the main thing. That's mm-hmm. really at the core of what I really kind of see a lot of things.
Yeah.
So, in this current climate, there's been a lot of minorities feeling marginalized. Are you feeling marginalized as part of a minority?
What is your, what is your opinion on that?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's happening even though I don't get into any kind of personal issues with the police. Mm-hmm. I mean, last time I got a ticket, I was at the courthouse the next day taking care of it. I don't wait around for warrants to be issued on me and all that kind of foolishness. I think that people that live like that are stupid. Mm-hmm. And I don't, it's just not a part of my lifestyle. I just don't want to, I don't want any kind of legal claims on my person.
Yeah.
So,
and is that just your personality? You're just like, I just want to take care of it.
That's part of it. That part is my dad was in law enforcement for a while and was a Border Patrol agent for a while.
Oh, wow.
And so, it's just something we don't get knocks at the door for stuff. We take care of this kind of stuff before it gets to that point.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, they give you, at least unless it's changed, they give, like when you get pulled over, they give you like 12 days to, they call it making dispensation of the ticket. Mm. Uh-huh. And so after that, they issue a bench warrant. Uh-huh. And the next time you get pulled over, it pops up on their computer, and you go into jail. So I was like, no, here, ticket. Okay, I'm headed straight. If it's in the day, middle of the day, I'm headed straight to court, mm-hmm. to the court building to get set up for. If it's it's usually traffic, defensive driving, traffic school. I don't hang out on downtown on 6th Street during the week and all, or really at all. But that's another part of the problem here is the folks that end up in conflict with the police. A lot of times it's down there, and they're coming out of bars, and I don't. It's kind of, there's stuff that the police are doing that is overboard, but it's kind of like, okay, well, you were there, and
it's coming from both sides. It's not
you
just
could have just gone to a bar in another part of town and had a few drinks and gone home, and no problems. Mm-hmm. So there've been a lot of conflict. There's been a lot of conflict there, but. Nothing like what was going on like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So as far as.
So do you feel like it's getting better?
I don't know. It's getting, okay. Seems to have gotten quiet. And that just means, because 30 years ago, these were local things and there was no internet. And so something had to really be big in order to break out of one part of the country and even make it onto the news in another part.
So even 20 years all, ago.
Yeah, it's that's all tweeted and on Facebook and everything. And so people are getting getting pissed off about things that they wouldn't have known about before.
Right.
So I think that I think it's a good thing that we know, but it used to be, and maybe the more attention coming to these things can get them hopefully resolved sooner. But all the like the YouTube videos watching people getting gunned down and the watching the police put handcuffs on a corpse and things like that. Oh, well, now he's under arrest. Okay. Kind of thing. That was that's watching that kind of stuff was pissing me off, but I can't. I'm not mobile enough as far as traveling to be able to just up and run to some protest in Missouri, or something like that. So it's kind of like I'm just sitting. It's kind of like when you have a cat and they sometimes they'll get they'll lash out at their humans because they're stuck in this window watching stuff that they want to chase,
right?
And they can't, and they're getting frustrated. And so that's kind of how I feel about the stuff that's on the news. Is it pisses me off, but I can't. And if I just sit there and focus on that, I'm just going to be ranting on Facebook and lashing out at people for who aren't even responsible for any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And that's not healthy.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend go ahead.
To answer your question, I want to say the marginalization is there. I kind of feel like I'm in sort of a bubble.
Okay.
And it's not really touching me directly, but if there are conversations and I can really only kind of think about like job situations.
Right.
If there were conversations and my race came up, I mean, the whole time that I've been working, I probably wouldn't have known about it.
Sure.
Right.
And so, just like your question about affirmative action, I'll go ahead and answer.
Go ahead. Yeah, go for it. Sure.
Do you want me to read that one? So.
Well, you asked if how I felt about the idea that it's keeping blacks down by enabling and parenting and not allowing them to. What was the rest of?
Yeah, and parenting them as if they have no ability to lead their own movement.
Okay. I agree, but here's the thing.
Okay.
The solutions that are, and when I say solutions, I'm talking about the cure, not the treatment.
Okay.
That's not coming from conservatives.
Hmm.
Flaunting your wealth in front of people who don't have the skills and ability through legitimate means to acquire the same things is not setting an example. It's being a show-off. And I think that's what a lot of what's happening with a lot of the when people in conservative circles who have acquired a certain amount of status or upper middle class or whatever, when they talk about setting an example or leading by example.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's trips to Nordstrom's and all that that's not helping, and that's not providing opportunities. Now, because these same a lot of the same people that are quote unquote business people are the same ones that are making decisions to send outsourced jobs. Mm. Whether it's over, whether it's somebody in another state doing your job or somebody in another country. So right. That's not really, I think conservatives have identified the problem, but they're not helping. And there's not much help coming from the quote unquote left either. Sure. Uh-huh. Because there's wherever there's progress, it's heavily weighted towards maintaining the status quo. Okay. And that's where, when I talk about cures versus treatment, because if the doctors handed out the cure for something that where you would never catch this again, mm-hmm. they would run out of patients. That's the theory, at least. That's how. That's why people say that the conspiracy theory that there's a cure for cancer, but they won't give it out because it's more money in the treatment.
Oh,
so. Right. Yeah. There are ways of as far as the school system, they need to teach the kids about money. I mean, I took,
yes.
There was a class called in the 70s and 80s. I don't know now because I've been out of high school for a long time, but there was a class called Mathematics of Consumer Economics.
Uh-huh.
And, it was, I was on what's called the engineering track. So I took algebra, geometry, second year algebra, and then pre-calculus. And if you went to summer school and all and got the extra credits that way, you could take calculus as a senior. Mm-hmm. So that was the mathematics track I was on. MOCE was for kids that didn't have the technical math aptitude.
Uh-huh.
But doing quadratic equations does not show you how to balance a checkbook or understand how mortgage amortization works.
Yes,
or any of those kinds of things. Money isn't taught in public school.
Right.
And so the kids come out and they're trying to get a job, and the way the job market is right now and for the last several years, they're not able to, they don't know what to do with the money when they got it.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up in debt because they want all these things, and the advertising is coming at them with, well, you know, here it is. You can just pay us a little bit every month and mm-hmm. all that, and you can have it now. And all. And so, and it's Dave Ramsey, he has some good ideas, but a lot of people haven't been able to save up the $4,000 that those kind of people say you need to have before you start an investment program.
Right.
And so that they're living every other week. You know, it's just the first and the 15th. For a lot of people, after you get out of school, it's first and 15th, and that's going to last for most of the rest of your life. And if you are able to get into a job that has some good benefits and some advancement, and you finally get your head screwed on straight about the finances, you can maybe have a halfway decent retirement uh-huh. in 40 years. But in the meantime, there's all this stuff. People are wanting the newest and greatest and cars and stereos and computers and everything. And so people end up with a lot of debt, and it is hanging around them like that millstone that's in the New Testament. So I think that teaching people about money, it's not going to produce a bunch of entrepreneurs necessarily, like the president or Kiyosaki,
mm-hmm.
but because we don't really need, you can't have just, there have to be people buying the products. You can't have just, excuse me, Sorry about that. Nothing but CEOs running things, running everything.
Right.
So I think that the education system, which the left seems to champion, isn't equipping the students. I wasn't equipped to deal with finances the way I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody should be in college, but the folks that are in college are dealing with a lot of debt. And you shouldn't take off your cap and gown at 22 and owe somebody a luxury vehicle or a house.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I feel you, brother.
So that kind of leads into the next question. How do you feel about the vouchers and stuff? You know, how do you feel about the voucher program?
Well, where has that even been implemented?
It's because been implemented here in Colorado.
Okay. It hasn't been in Texas.
Okay.
A lot of, you're going to find a lot, here there's going to be a lot of resistance to things like that, that we were hearing about during the Clinton years. We started hearing about vouchers. I never heard of a voucher before, like 1990 or 1992.
Mm-hmm.
What they have been doing here is, at least I think I heard this correctly, there's some of the, it's called a Robin Hood program.
Oh.
And it's taking money from more wealthier districts and transferring it to less wealthy districts.
Oh.
I don't know if that's the case or not, but I did hear about it. I have not heard about vouchers being implemented in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
No. It was mostly so I don't.
I think that
there's been talk here in Oklahoma, but I don't think it's actually been done.
Because so you got this money. And I guess it goes to the school, like the same place where they get their tax money from. It goes to whatever bank account is the repository for that. But you've got to, it sounds like if it's going to put better quality equipment and upgraded facilities where the kids are living,
mm-hmm.
I would support it. But if it's more busing,
mm-hmm.
that hasn't worked very well.
Mm-hmm.
At least not that I've seen.
The voucher program allows them to leave the district that they're in and go to mm-hmm. a place where their parents might think they'll get a better education.
Yeah, and so a lot of the times it goes to it'll go to a private school, so whether that be a secular private school or more often it's a religious private school.
Okay, that part I didn't understand. Well, they haven't put that in place here. I've heard people even as late as 2014 saying that that's what we needed was vouchers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know I how well it's working where it is being implemented. It just seems like you're gonna, because when I was in school we had like drama, band, and the choir, music, and orchestra, and science, all of that, and the shop classes were all in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got these science academy and liberal arts academy and things like that scattered around town. And if you wanted to take those classes, you can't get them all in the same building now.
Right.
And so And since I'm not married and don't have children, hadn't really had a connection with the school system,
mm-hmm.
when I heard about it, I'm like, what are they putting in the drinking water at the school board to come up with that idea? So I think that we need to, I think we really need to go, I don't like saying go backward, but yeah, I think we've had it, they had it more right before, and this fractured style isn't, and the standardized test, which I wasn't dealing with, and Lee, at least most of the folks that I knew from my class, we seemed to, whether we went to college after or not, we seemed to turn out okay.
Right.
And now it's like they've got, you know, teaching standardized test, teaching for the standardized test instead of teaching the knowledge that the children need to have.
Yeah. So it's like trying to reinvent the wheel, and it wasn't really broken.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about the Common Core math thing, because my parents complained about what they call the new math.
Yeah. I remember when that
when I was little, and I didn't understand what that meant. Mm-hmm. I never learned what it is that they learned. I just was what I was trying to scrawl out on paper, and they were calling it the new math. So I don't understand. I probably have an easier time doing Sudoku than I would Common Core equations. But I'm tempted to call that the new math.
Right.
And I guess our generation's complaining about it, like my parents' generation complained about what I was dealing with.
As someone who, for whom math is my native language, I've looked at the Common Core math and how it's done, and it makes sense to me. Like, that's how I do math. And so it's people who have to learn math, who didn't just like absorb it. Maybe it's different, but I've talked to other people who just are innately mathematical, and they're like, yeah, that's kind of how I do it. Find the tens. Yep. That makes sense. So I think it's all just different ways of learning the same thing.
My kids are doing Common Core math, and my sister's a math teacher, and it's fantastic. It's fantastic. But basically, I mean, I was a high school teacher, and I taught computers, and basically it's just telling the kids to read the directions. Read the directions. I mean, 90% of the questions that they have in class can be answered by, did you read the directions? And then they say, yes. And you say, well, why don't you read them out loud to me? And they do. And then they're like, oh, yeah, okay, there you go. There you go.
I think it probably just comes down to it being something new or being something different.
Well, and there's bat writers for every math book and every math curriculum. So every now and then you're going to come across a Common Core word problem that was poorly written. And, you know, that one's going to be the one that gets shared on Facebook a million times. But that's not how the majority of math is, at least not for my kids.
Right, right. So,
yeah, so I, like I said, as far as vouchers, I think that might help, but I don't know. There's still other problems that aren't going away. Like, they're not, who is it? One of the guys from Mythbusters, I think, who said you need to bring back shop and have the kids doing things and learning to do things, and bring back band, and their test scores will go up. Mm-hmm. And
the arts, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And seems like there's some wisdom there, because it's like, why did you take the metal shop and wood shop out, and the power mechanics where we rebuilt when I took it, we rebuilt a 4-cycle lawnmower engine.
Yeah.
And learned at least. Now, I tried it with our lawnmower, and it wasn't pretty. But when you're following the directions and you have the parts cleaning machine and everything, and you can do everything the way the teacher's talking about it, we actually got the engine to run. So I tell people, well, don't turn me loose on your engine, but we did learn how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because I say people, that's why I kind of probably act like a 27-year-old a lot, because I never lost my sense of wonder.
Ah, yeah.
And I believe that people, like I've run into a lot of 30-somethings, and when they start hitting 34 and 35 or whatever, and they start saying they're old.
Uh-huh.
And I say, stop listening to the propaganda. You're not old until you have abandoned your sense of wonder.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why I've got friends in all every generation.
Uh-huh.
Because of that. And a lot of shop class and science class contributed to that for me. I didn't take art.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't in the music, but those classes helped to solidify that for me, and I really think that's important. It can't just all be Pokestops and a lot of the this celebrity that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like we lost something when we stopped doing that. And that I'd like to see come back, even if they have to, even if they're going to keep the damn tests.
Yeah.
I'll answer the black teens question first.
Ah.
Okay.
I am one of those.
Yeah.
So I had to put up with some flack from other kids when I was, because I wasn't listening to just the black station, and I wasn't just listening to hip hop.
Yeah.
And I would go to, like, one of the first concerts I actually spent money that I'd earned to go to was John Denver.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I caught a huge amount of flack about that.
Uh-huh.
And it was just something I had to put up with. And I have had people say over the years, because if you look at my music collection, it's really diverse, and it's not any one color or any one genre. And I've had people try to say that I think I'm white. It's like, no, I don't think I'm white. I'm just not, I don't have any limits.
Yeah, you're just not playing to the stereotype. You like what you like because you like it, not because it's what you're expected to like.
That confuses people that think that my playlist should just be strictly hip hop and neo soul and R&B. I have some of that, but a lot of times you'll find me listening to Delirium or Enigma or something like that, as well. And there's some country and other things that I listen to, and so it's kind of like it's music, and it's not I don't put an adjective in front of it. It's music.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've seen that happen, and I really haven't. I guess when I was a teenager and going through it, I didn't really notice anybody else that was dealing with the same thing. It was kind of all the unwanted attention was coming at me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like, yeah, it happens and it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the kids should try to find someone who's been through the same thing, that's older and can talk, that they can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
But don't dumb yourself down to fit something, because you're just, that's part of it's probably a small part, but it's part of some of this depression that's going on around here.
Oh, sure.
And so I'd say don't not be who you are just to please the status quo, because they don't, they're probably not going to be a part of your life later on.
Yeah, and we're all the way we are so that we can contribute to greater society. So if we are changing ourselves to fit in, then we're not living into what we should be and being able to contribute.
Yeah. As far as the beta male, I'm not a control freak.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't... If a woman is wanting to cut her hair, color her hair, do what makes you happy. And I'm not controlling enough to really. If she's not happy with it, I don't want her doing. Doing stuff to please me, because what pleases me is if she's happy with who she is.
Yeah.
And
I think that goes with the last thing that you're talking about, like, don't change yourself for society. You're saying, yeah, she should just be how she is most happy.
I don't know if I could be a Proverbs 31 husband.
Uh-huh.
I believe in partnerships and not... leadership by being in front of the pack.
Yeah.
And so to whatever extent alpha versus beta male, well, first of all, there's only one alpha male in the pack. And when you get two alpha males in the pack, somebody's going to die.
Right.
If you are pride, lion prides or wherever, what in the quote unquote animal kingdom, that's, you end up with somebody dies in that group. So they're going to have to be, to whatever extent there are other males in the family, there are going to have to be some betas, and I am one. Now, as far as what I've heard it said by people who are trying to say that we're weak, and they want this kind of Tom Selleck from Quigley Down Under guy. And we can't all be that.
Yeah.
You're going to have the really big guy from Lost.
Mm-hmm.
That you're going to have some guys that look like that in the pack, and you just have to, space needs to be made for them, and not trying to make them all turn into this other thing.
Right.
So as far as being I haven't gotten the opportunity yet, and I'm not really that associated with being a Christian. Hang on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really, as far as still being quote unquote Christian, I'm not necessarily that anymore, but I wouldn't fit the biblical husband picture as it's popularized in Western culture.
Right.
And I that's just, it's not because I'm weak, it's because I don't want to be a jerk.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be yelling and screaming in my family to get things done that we could say please and thank you and get done a lot easier.
Yeah, it's because you're not a douche. That's all it is. I mean, you just yes, not.
That's a good another. It's another good word for it.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of I think those models need to be revised.
Mm.
And because I don't think they're really serving. I don't think they've ever really served. Maybe they did. A couple thousand years ago. But we'd already set up that disempowering misogynistic we were already under that, and as women are becoming more emergent in our world, men need to take it down a few notches. Uh-huh. And if you want an example of how that can kind of work, then watch the beta males.
Yeah.
Because we might be seen as too nice by some folks, but we're not. Our girlfriends and our wives and our sisters and mothers aren't having to come in, come to see us in the hospital or,
right. Or in prison,
or drag us home from some bar or something like that, right, all the time.
Yeah,
and that's kind of where a lot of guys that are this whole take charge thing. Uh-huh. But they're only in charge of their families. A lot of times they end up acting out a lot of this stuff,
yeah,
in aggressive mode all the time.
Right.
With they end up getting in trouble, and that's not you. That doesn't help your family. Mm-hmm. When you've got you're seeing the probation officer, mm-hmm, for something that you could have just said, okay, yeah, he called me that. And he said that about my mother, but I know it's not true, so I don't really need to get into this knife fight or fist fight or break this bottle or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right now, I can just walk away because this guy is gonna look like an ass.
Yeah.
Even more so because I didn't retaliate, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I think misogyny not only does violence to women, it does violence to men too, because they are feel like they have to perform or to puff themselves up and not be themselves. And so it does damage to them as well. It's not just to women. So yeah.
And a lot of that doesn't get looked at because we're looking at this through an old lens.
Right. So, well, Ray, thank you for coming on our show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It was so fun.
I got to talk about some things that I didn't talk about on the other show, and
yeah,
so it's been fun.
Yeah, awesome. It was so nice to hear about all your nerdy stuff. I loved it.
Okay, so Callie has our feedback section today.
Yeah. So Mike McVeigh said, at Twisted Sisters, # because women are human. Does anything else really need to be said? #dignity, #respect. Thanks for bringing men into the world, I think? ? Yeah, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Peter Thurley, who actually trolled a little bit today while I was looking through our feedback for this section. I trolled him. He's from Canada.
Uh-huh.
Peter Thurley says, enjoying listening to At Twisted Sisters with at SwolfGirl 1987. Fun, geeky ideas and faith deconstruction conversations from a woman's perspective. Thank you. That was nice. Joshua Kanan at El Kanan, at Twisted Sisters, and a bunch of other ats, including Richard Rohr. We stole it fair and square, and I think he was talking about taking land from the Indians.
Oh, he probably was. Should I tell them who Joshua is?
Yeah, Joshua's my brother. And actually, he didn't know who Richard Rohr was. He goes, this guy, Richard Rohr. And I was like, what do you mean this guy, Richard Rohr? Yeah, Josh, you don't even know. Richard Rohr is like, you know, famous.
He's father Richard Rohr. Come on.
He's literally the father of the deconstructionist movement.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah.
Literally the father.
Maybe not intentionally, but that's how it worked out.
Yeah, and okay, so Huff the Magic Dragon and Marie J. Walker and the At Twisted Sisters and even Tony Bedora, to an extent, have been putting a lot of photos in our Twisted Sisters Twitter feed. So if you ever want to look at the GIFs that they've been throwing back and forth at each other, visit the feed. It's hilarious. It's true. They go back and forth. And we did do a guest spot on Blake Chastain's Exvangelical. If you haven't listened to his podcast, it's so well produced. And Blake Chastain is such a great host. He had us on his podcast, and he said at Twisted Sisters it was great. Yeah, it was great. We had such a good time nerding out together. And of course, there's more gifts, Harry Potter gifts specifically.
And some Doctor Who ones, too.
And some Doctor Who ones and some fangirling ones. So there were some really good ones there. Beck Ray said, as a woman training for ordained ministry, I get by with a little help from my friends at Twisted Sisters, hashtag because women are human.
Aww.
Yeah, that was a good one. Let's see, what else did we have in our Twitter feed specifically? Barbara Gregory at Twisted Sisters, great show. First time I've ever been mentioned by name on a podcast. Woohoo. You're about to be very excited because you've been mentioned a couple times on this episode, Barb.
Right.
Nice to meet you in real life. Hashtag because women are human. Hashtag shout out virgin. That's awesome. Ray, who was on our show today at Twisted Sisters, hashtag that's rebellion speaking. Nice. He also said the women not leading thing is found in the book of First Dominations.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Oh, it's a joke. I have no idea. Were you guys talking to each other about that? That's a good joke.
That was, well, so yeah, you weren't on the episode. That was our, that was like two episodes ago. No, it was the last episode with Janet, and we were talking about women pastors, and so in First Timothy, I believe it is, it talks about women not being able to teach a man.
First,
and so that's what he's saying.
Oh,
so
I get it, Ray.
The book of First Dominations. Yeah.
Nice. Well done. Mac Oliver, I'm halfway through at Twisted Sisters, and I have to go to work. I don't want to be patient. hashtag pub problems, hashtag womansplaining. That was a good one. Jess says, at the liturgist and at Twisted Sisters number 7, thinking of something more fun to do right now. More fun than listening to us talk?
Oh, no, I bet that was the liturgist t-shirt thing. I don't know if you saw that.
Because she's a 7.
And she's 7.
That's fantastic. Well done, Jess.
It was probably just because one of us like had tweeted something under the Twisted Sisters she replied to that. I bet that's what it was.
Yeah. At Twisted Sisters, love this week episode. This is from Haley at Hales Noel. Mm-hmm. At Twisted Sisters, love this week's episode. So good to hear that discussion. Hashtag because women are human. Let's see. Linda R. said, well, maybe at Twisted Sisters is what I need. Let's see. I hope we were what you needed, because we would love to have you listening to our podcast.
We sure think so.
I know. We like our podcast. At Twisted Sisters from Ian Irving. Somehow I heard at Walker J. Marie's expression as soon as baby animals were mentioned. Hashtag, yes. I forgot the hashtag. Nice. Brian O'Dine at Twisted Sisters, I've had 2 different women pastors and supervisors. They've been incredible to learn from and know. Good. I'm glad to hear you had a good experience with women pastors. The more good women pastors out there, the better. Mac Oliver said, I would have left the church long ago if not for my female deacon friend, Carissa. Hashtag because women are human. Hashtag pub altar call. Go, Becky.
Brand pub evangelist. Woo woo.
That's right. Let's see. Was there any other? Cade Cook. Hey, at Twisted Sisters. Thanks for so much fun and being an awesome follower. That may or may not have been an ad. I have no idea. I just filtered out everything that had our name in it. we started a yoga accountability group on Twisted Sisters. If you're in the pub, or even if you're not, I think you could probably, on our at Twisted Sisters feed, be a part of the yoga accountability group that we talked about in one of the episodes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So
yeah, just hit us up on our Twitter. We'll get you included in that.
Here's some of our ex-evangelical ones. The new episode 27 is the Twisted Sisters one. Ex-evangelical said it was great to talk to the Twisted Sisters and hear their stories. We talked for 90 minutes, and I feel like we just scratched the surface. truth, I also felt like we just scratched the surface. We were having a great time over there on that one. Travis Hicks, listening to At Twisted Sisters and At Pastards for the win before pound sign became hashtag forever the wow wheels. Whoa. Okay, no, I don't know. I have no idea what that hashtag is. Let's see. Two companions started this episode earlier. You are speaking my language, ladies and gent. Love it.
Cool.
And well, looks like we've got a lot of our own stuff in here. Just we've been keeping our feed pretty filled up. We have a lot of conversations going on. So if you want to have good conversation, come over to the Twisted Sisters Twitter feed, because we really go back and forth quite a bit. Have a lot of really good talks. Allison McElroy said you should listen to Polly Name Brad and Becky Seville podcasts. That was nice. Thank you, Allison. Not Your Pastors podcast said, do people worship their pastors? Thoughts? At Bros Bibles and Beer, at Pastards Podcast, at probably the wrong pod, at See Other Drugs. Church and Other Drugs, at Method Theology, and at Twisted Sisters. Do people worship their pastors? Yes, I think that people do worship their pastors or use them as an example that they shouldn't.
Yeah.
That's just my own.
And so that's the answer. I think going back to our episode, like two episodes ago, when we talked to Mandy about her experiences as a pastor's wife, I think that is pretty telling. Her story is pretty telling in that.
When you take someone and you put them in a clear box and you expect them to be exactly what you want them to be, that's the exact thing we do with God 100% of the time. We take him and put him in a box and expect him to be what we want him to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with yes. Rose Bible and Beer responded to that saying it happens. People probably aren't aware they do it, though.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a good – there was some good conversation going on around that specific thing. And, yeah, that was pretty much it. That's been pretty much all of our feedback. So – we need to do some hashtags, because we got to get some good hashtags for the next section of feedback. If you want to hear yourself mentioned on the Twisted Sisters,
absolutely,
try one of our hashtags and we will get you on the episode.
Okay, so let's see here. Okay, so I'll read off Michael's here. Hashtag we are the Inglorious Pastards, because that's how I started off the episode. Hashtag I'm a terrible alcoholic.
Yeah, that's me.
Hashtag not nerdy, crunchy.
There you go.
Hashtag running and Doctor Who are my love languages. Sorry. Hashtag can we just opt out of heaven?
Oh, man.
That's from Ray. Hashtag math is my native language.
That's right.
And hashtag this guy, Richard Rohr. What do you have? Do you have any, Callie?
Yeah, I have hashtag the what the F star. I have hashtag because you're not a douche.
Yes.
Hashtag not a Proverbs 31 husband. Hashtag it can't all be pokey stops. And hashtag sci-fi OD.
Nice. I have hashtag super nerdy metal. Hashtag running and Doctor Who.
Nice.
Hashtag fair trade chocolate. Hashtag old people are jackasses. Hashtag snarky sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
Hashtag does not compute. Hashtag continuing disillusion.
Oh.
Hashtag wonder of creation. Hashtag fell into a black hole. Hashtag pokey stops and celebrity stuff.
Pokey stops and celebrity
stuff. Hashtag somebody's going to die.
Oh no.
And hashtag father deconstruction.
Oh. Okay, well, I really want the pokey stops and celebrity stuff. That one makes me laugh so
much. I'm good for it. Let's do that.
That was a good one. Okay, hashtag pokey stops and celebrity stuff.
So if you have listened to our whole episode, hit us up on Twitter at Twisted Sisters with hashtag Pokestops and celebrity stuff. And I'm at Becky Seville.
And I'm at Callie Search 79.
At least that's what I think you are. Yes.
That's what I think I am.
And I will. So I have the cultural input for this week.
Nice.
And so I figured that since it is Black History Month, I am going to do a share a poem from a Black poet. So this poem is Dreams by Langston Hughes. Hold fast to dreams, for as dreams die, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow.